Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 608, Enola Holmes. How hard should I hit the L in Holmes?
Yeah, I mean, it's
hard enough,
Holmes,
I guess.
Holmes.
You have to differentiate Sherlock between Holmes. Enola Holmes. I mean, that's a real estate agent.
Or I spent the whole time waiting for her to drop a bomb on Hiroshima. So,
well, all right, but that wasn't going to happen.
No, that was the right. Enola Gay. Sorry.
Yeah, Yeah. Different person. Actually, yeah. Just a different thing altogether.
Yes, very different. Very yeah. Different indeed.
Yes.
So let's real quick go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And joining us from the Next Best Picture podcast is Nicole Ackman. Hey, Nicole, how's it going?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you for being here. I don't know where you're at. Is this super early for you?
It's only 9 here. I'm in North Carolina, so the timing worked out really well for me.
That's good. Last week we had someone from Hawaii, and it was like 5 a.m. for her. So
I believe it was 4 a.m.
4 a.m.?
Yeah, I think it was 4, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
and like, we weren't like, you've got to do this podcast. We were like, we understand if you can't do this podcast. And she's like, I really want to do it.
Yeah. So,
whenever I lived in London for a while and I did some podcasts at weird hours over there. I remember there was one podcast I did at like 3 in the morning my time. And by the end of it, I was like, I know I'm not making sense. So this time, I'm a real human. I can make real points.
Good to know. That's preferable. So, quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts, you can find us. So be sure and subscribe while you're there so you never miss an episode. And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers while you're there. Like the page, join the group, and become a League of Show Sharers. People who were kind enough to share the show this week: Griffin Fox Smith, Lane Levanway, Chris Valls, Aaron Marlowe, Gabriel Lugo, Tom Kaminsky, Julianne Jordan, Chris Sanders, Chris Magic Man, Ralph Tribble, Travis Tewitt, Tammy Sherman Powers, and then from the Twitterverse, Nerd Adonis.
That's his Christian name.
And really, because Adonis is a Greek god. That's very confusing.
Exactly.
Yeah, very ahead of his time.
I'm not, yeah. Or behind his time. Now I'm all confused. You Watch, I Listen podcast, Daniel and Dean from the Movie Journey podcast, Jason from Binge Movies, you might remember him from the Hustler episode, Ronnie Castle, Colby Mack, Mike One, and also Mike from Mike and Oscar, B Gamer, Aaron Feelin' Film podcast, Kevin the Critic, Chris at Chris Movie Corner, JD Duran from In Session Film, Geek to Me Radio, Ryan L. Terry, and Chris Williams. So thank you very much, guys, for sharing the show. We greatly appreciate it. So, we also have a Patreon. There we go. I knew there was something else I was supposed to plug. Patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content, and you help out, and we secretly like you extra, but it's not a secret. So, there's
and I
all
think,
that.
I think there's a new review.
Oh, that's right. I already forgot. There's a new review coming right
yeah.
here.
This one's coming from Dave_17. It's a 5-star review, just in case anybody was wondering.
Well, we skipped the other ones.
Yeah,
we?
No.
Sometimes we read those.
Sometimes we get
depending
so mad
on where,
we read them.
Depending on what they say. I started listening to this show since Ford v. Ferrari, and it was so good that I went back and listened to the old episodes on movies that I have watched. I really like the Box Office Report episodes, sorry, when they go off on tangents, but I love the ones when they know it's going to be a bad movie and they absolutely destroy it. I'm absolutely going to join the Patreon. Great show. Subscribe now. Thanks, Dave.
Well, thank you,
awesome.
Dave. So there's all of that. And if you want to leave a review, we'd love to read it. So you can swing on by Apple Podcasts and leave one. That's probably the easiest way. So anyway, there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
So I did not realize that this... I thought this character was made up for this movie.
You didn't read the books, Joe?
I had no idea. No, I didn't.
All characters are made up, Joe. You know
that,
right?
Yeah, but they start somewhere sometimes, you know, somewhere else first.
Yeah.
No, this is a series of books. Sherlock did not have a younger sister until the young adult series.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
But he did, just so you know, he did have the older brother. That's a real thing.
I know. I watched plenty of Sherlock. I know that Mycroft exists.
I kept wanting to call him Minecraft.
Netflix account tweeted something about that, though, about like his name is not Minecraft, so I don't think you're the only one. So
kids are like, what is this? Why did they name him after a Minecraft game? Like, I bet there's so many, like, the younger audience that watch seriously thinks his name is Minecraft.
Yeah.
I will say, just to touch on that briefly,
he's gonna kill somebody with a pickaxe. Sorry.
Yeah, the casting of Henry Cavill and the guy who plays Mycroft.
Oh,
I said it.
Nicole's
a
big fan of his. I know.
I am a big Sam Claflin fan.
Sometimes we talk about like casting people who are supposed to be related and they look nothing alike. These guys actually look alike. Like,
which is really wild, because if you see them like not in their look for this movie, I would not be like, oh, these two look alike. Like, I watched some of the interviews that they've been doing, and Sam Claflin in real life looks nothing like he does in this movie. So then whenever I saw them in the movie, I was like, now I get why they cast them as brothers. Because at first I was like, that's kind of a weird pairing, but all right.
Yeah.
The
scene that I'm thinking of is when he's getting a shave, when Mycroft is getting a shave. And I was like, man, he's got the same teeth. Like, he's very similar to Henry Cavill.
Well, they're both British, Joe.
Well, here's the thing that I really...
That's why they look alike.
Here's the thing that I really thought was interesting, that I really think drove home how much they look like brothers. When he was getting that shave, his mustache was CGI. Did you know that?
It's all about the mustache.
There needed to be there should have been some reference to the mustache.
I was like, bowler hat tip, sir.
But also, Helena Bonham Carter, I just feel like was also kind of miscast. I think she's fantastic.
Miscast.
Movie, but she looks way younger to have a son the age of Henry Cavill.
She's youthful looking, though. Helena Bonham Carter has been, I'm not calling her like, oh, she's super old, but I mean, she's been acting for a long time. Like, I don't think you may realize as youthful
as she
looks.
But do you think she's old enough to have a son the age of like 35?
I know, but I mean, the Sam Claflin's actually 2 years younger than Henry Cavill.
She's 54.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Oh, then. Oh, and how old's Henry Cavill? I'm saying 35.
Okay,
but...
I did the math. She would have been 17 when she had him. Were she his mother? Which, to be fair, in a period film,
right?
That's fair. That's
I was
totally
thinking the same.
Fair. It would be a little bit young for the time, but it's still.
Would it though? I mean, they were.
Mm-hmm.
But would it be young for the time? Because I mean, they're trying to send her to finishing school to get married off, and she's, you know, 15.
Yeah, typically
she's
girls 16. Didn't graduate finishing school until they were like 18, and particularly for an upper class girl, it might have been a little bit later than that. But sorry, that's my like history major
jumping out.
Like,
we don't know. Like, we...
But it's maybe a little on the young side, but definitely believable.
But I don't think you necessarily expect actors to be playing their exact age.
No.
If they need
don't,
to age her up 4 or 5 years and age him down 4 or 5 years, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're really talking a matter of months ultimately. So it's, you know.
Joe's like, what can I pick apart? This movie's really good. And
it's not like when they had Cher playing Meryl Streep's mother in Mamma Mia 2. Yeah. Like, it's not that
bad. That doesn't work.
Let's not forget when Sally Field played Tom Hanks' girlfriend in Punchline and like 2 years later played his mother in Forrest Gump.
Oh, that hurts.
I forgot she played his girlfriend in that movie. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. No. So that I have a couple nitpicks, but overall, I think this was
Was this supposed to go to theaters?
No.
And did Netflix snag this? It was just always a Netflix thing.
I think they always intended it for Netflix.
I think it was always a Netflix thing, which kind of makes sense with, like, Molly. Wow. Millie Bobby Brown. There we go.
Sure, that also
her, like, involvement, sure. Her producing it. I guess they were like, hey, the people like you. What else do you want to do?
Yeah, totally.
That's not a Godzilla movie.
And she's great in this movie. This is the first time I've ever seen her actually able to kind of flex her muscles, you know? I mean,
I was going to say the same thing.
She's really good in Stranger Things, don't get me wrong, but for the first two seasons, she barely says a word, and she kind of just gets mad, you know, gets angry and does her power thing. But the third,
and she did some egos.
But yeah, she does have to convey a lot without talking. I mean, that's a skill.
Totally, but she's a good actor, but I mean, as far as like being charismatic and, right. and getting like the stuff she does in this movie where she's breaking the fourth wall and talking to the camera and her interactions with her brothers and her relationship with the guy, you know, the young guy she meets, like she's really able to convey a lot. And so I've never seen her, I guess, act this much. And I'm like, okay, this really proves what I think we all knew she was good, but like this made her stand out, and I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more of her after this.
For sure. And she was in the second Godzilla movie, but that wasn't really an actor's movie.
Nobody went to go see that.
Yeah. When they're just like, oh, Millie Bobby Brown's in this. I'm like, no, I just want to see Godzilla blow up some monsters. Yeah, like, that's kind of where I am in this movie.
Run away from large monster. I mean, she was fine, right. but again, like, this was the movie.
It's a paycheck.
And she does more in Stranger. Do you guys all watch Stranger Things? Like, in season three, she definitely gets to do more. But
that's the only show that I don't skip the credits for.
Why is that?
Because I love that
theme song.
Oh. I love it. Yeah. It's amazing. It's great. Yeah,
I saw a review compare her to a young Keira Knightley in terms of, like, she feels both quite modern while also not feeling like she's out of place in a period film. And I thought that was very interesting.
My wife asked if she was the love child of Keira Knightley and Natalie Portman.
I was definitely getting some there Natalie Portman vibes for sure.
So it's funny you mentioned that, because she's like, is she not like they're done, like, you know, because of
I do think that she has something very like direct about her that we also saw like in Keira Knightley, like around the same age.
Sure.
And you know, an ability to kind of feel quite fresh but not feel out of place in this like Victorian setting, because sometimes I think, especially with young actors, they can just feel quite out of place and like unsure how to exist in a sort of period drama world.
Yeah,
but I think she does a really good job of kind of walking that balance.
Yeah,
which is also difficult when she is front and center, right? Like, this is her movie. That Henry Cavill and Helena Bonham Carter are in this movie, but this is her movie.
Oh, like, it's absolutely her movie. And
she's breaking the fourth wall, and she's, you know,
and it helps, I think, that while it does have a period piece, it's only a light veneer of a period piece, at least from an acting standpoint. Obviously, visually, it's very period, but I mean, it has a very modern sensibility, not just in terms of acting styles and line deliveries, but even in terms of political sensibilities. So
sure. Yeah. So I guess just to get into it, we're introduced to Eola Holmes and her mother, and she kind of has this, she hasn't really been exposed to the world outside, because her mom has kind of kept her close, but also taught her survival skills, basically. I mean, she's got her brother is, it's almost like Superman Begins. Like, he's not the Sherlock Holmes that we come to know. It's almost like a kind of a redo of the Sherlock TV show.
Well, like, he doesn't know Watson yet. This is pre-Watson.
Yeah, Watson isn't around. He's still solving cases, and he's just becoming friends with, who's the detective?
Lestrade.
Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, he's starting to build a reputation, but he's not the Sherlock Holmes that we know yet. But she's got a brain like him.
If he was a rock band, he'd be doing well, but he's still at the club level.
Yeah, right. He's still an opening act. He's not the main event yet.
But, you know, the other thing is, too, to your point, Joe, with she hasn't been exposed to the outside world, but it's not like she's naive. Her mother is raising her to do things that usually only men would do. Like, she's not like, you're a girl, you have to be a proper lady and go to finishing school.
No, she's doing archery and fencing and judo.
Science. So her mom is just raising her to be well-rounded as an individual and not locked into this. You're a girl, you do this. You're a guy, you do this. And so once her mom is out of the picture, we see what a male male, you know, her older brother ends up being, you know, the one that's in charge of what she...
Mycroft.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, the oldest brother, he's the one that's in charge of the estate and everything because he's a man. And he says, you have to be a proper lady. And he expects her to wear a hat and gloves and go to finishing school. And the mother didn't even have that stuff for her. She taught her how to do all this other stuff. And she obviously raised two very smart, talented young men, and she wasn't like...
Well, so, okay, so she didn't raise them, though, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, as soon as their father dies, Mycroft and Sherlock dip.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they leave.
Because because clearly the boys have no real concept of her parenting style, right?
Right.
Because, honestly, when you get the scene where they come back and you see the castle from, or the estate from the outside, not everything in Britain is a castle. I mean, that's very culturally insensitive of me, but it's nice to be culturally insensitive to white people. That's we don't get to do that very often.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, everybody's got a castle in England, right?
Right. Yeah.
But when you see the estate and what it's in such disarray, and you see, and they go inside and you see all the broken furniture, and it's like, I honestly was like, is this going to be like the mom had a psychotic break and Enola Holmes was basically raised by wolves? Like, I was wondering, like, what, because, like, what can be a free spirit in one hand can also be, like, not necessarily the best. And so I was really, for a moment, wondering which direction the film was going to go.
I just think there's something that's quite interesting, too, with this dynamic of she has these older brothers that she doesn't really know. Like, whenever they first meet, they literally walk straight past
right.
her because mm-hmm. they don't recognize her because they don't even know what she looks like. But then whenever she's telling Sherlock that she, like, has kept all the newspaper clippings about his cases, and there's something a little bit heartbreaking about that,
yeah.
that, you know, she takes after her, well, one of her older brothers, not the other one. And she clearly idolizes him, even though, like, her only real knowledge of him is, like, from a newspaper. And
yeah.
I do think that there's – I've still got some questions about, like, how this all ended up this way. And that's part of why I, like, really hope this gets a sequel or even becomes, like, a proper franchise, because I'm like, I have so many questions
yeah.
that I would like to see answered.
And I think that's clearly the goal, because I feel like there's –
For sure.
Some, there's a lot of loose ends with the mother subplot,
yes.
which we'll get to.
Well, and I also think this is the most popular Netflix debut so far. I mean, I know they keep doing that, but this is supposedly the most watched movie of theirs. So if anything can get another sequel, hopefully this would be right in line.
And it's got to be cheaper than some of the other stuff that is getting sequels, like
yeah.
you know, the
yeah.
Extraction 2 and that kind of stuff.
Oh, geez.
The
like,
old
what,
guard,
Triple Frontier yeah. or whatever, that $100 million.
Oh, no, they're gonna give Marty Scorsese $300 million to
right.
CG somebody, some old dude's face.
That's like six of these movies, you know?
Right.
You know, I will say that the scene where Holmes and Minecraft walk right by him.
So we're going to walk over that you just said Minecraft.
No,
right?
I'm going to say Minecraft every
he
time.
Said it on
that's
purpose.
What, that's what I just want to establish
yes.
that. Yeah. That's what we're doing. Okay.
I'm setting up a running gag, damn it. So I was also kind of like, though, but he's the world's best detective. Like, he's like, oh, I can tell by the way you cut your fingernails that, you know, it, but,
but he can't figure out who
but
his sister
he strolls
is.
Right by the sister because he hasn't seen her in 10 years. Like, that,
right.
I was just like, that seems a little wonky. But
I get it.
I do kind
also,
of feel like that's the kind of guy he is, though. Like, he's so busy.
I thought the same
he's
thing.
He's so busy solving everyone else's issues that he literally
okay,
like,
that's fair. Like,
doesn't
yeah,
know
he,
who his own sister is. Like,
yeah, like, that's not he's not trying to fix that problem.
Yep.
So it's
right.
not even on his radar.
And I will
yeah.
say, like, the chemistry, like, we've kind of gone on Henry Cavill from time to time regarding his chemistry, right? And his ability or charisma on screen. Sometimes it's his fault. Sometimes it's not.
It depends on the role.
It depends on the role, right? Like, I think he will make a great Superman once he's given the right stuff to do. I will say in this one, I thought their chemistry was really good. Like,
yes.
I thought I could feel that he knew there was something special about her, but didn't want to kind of lead her on. So he just kind of let her work through cases on her own, while dropping little clues and letting her, not being like hitting her over the head with like, read the newspaper, you dunce. But he was like, here's a newspaper, and just walked away. Right. And he kind of, but I did like them together. And then it seems like we might get them together further down the road.
Yeah, I hope. I agree.
Mycroft wants nothing to do with her.
I think they're both really good in this. I mean, Millie Bobby Brown is excellent. Again, I didn't know she could stretch this much just because I hadn't seen it. And I thought that her being able to talk to the camera and breaking the fourth wall, I think, is not an easy thing to do. It can go really well,
yeah,
and it can also seem kind of cheesy. And in this movie,
there was only one time that I didn't like it.
What was that?
Where there was towards the end where she like doesn't know what to do, and she turns to the camera and she's like, "Do you have any ideas?" And I'm like,
"Oh, cause it's like Blue's Clues or something."
Dora the Explorer.
I know that's the only time
swiper,
I didn't
no
like,
swiping.
It seemed way I thought Blue's Clues. It seemed way too kiddie because that's what they were doing like a little kids.
Right.
And I know this is a young adult thing, but like it did. If you've seen,
it is rated PG-13.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, like,
yeah, there's some
this
heavy
is
stuff.
Not the
in
same
here.
Audience as
no,
Dora the Explorer.
Exactly. So that's why I thought the same thing where it didn't like totally bother me, but I'm like, oh, okay, like I have just been watching the new Blue's Clues with my youngest son, and I'm
I think
like
it was supposed to be like a jokey way to just completely obliterate the fourth wall, but it came off totally like a Blue's Clues or Dora the Explorer, and I was just like, I don't think that's what you were going for there.
No, but she's really, really good,
and there's so many moments where I think like with another actress the role could have become just really annoying. Like, and I even think, like, maybe on paper this character's kind of annoying, but she has such a charm to her in the role that I don't think anyone could watch it and, like, not be totally on her side, which I think is a huge credit to her because I do think, like, that's not just the role itself. That's what she's bringing to it.
Yeah. Agreed. So the mother goes missing, and so her brothers come to try to, you know, find her slash take over the estate and manage it while she's gone. And like Tom said, they've completely for years, like, Minecraft has been paying for what he thinks is all these caretakers and carriages and all the, a renovation
lesson,
for the bathroom.
Lessons for Eola.
And all these lessons. And so the mother has been taking all this money and clearly not using it this way. At this point in the film, you don't see any of that on the screen. And so he's like, what is happening here? And he's trying to get everything in order. And Sherlock, of course, is interested in solving the case. And Enola's kind of like, hey, what about me? And Mycroft, because he's the oldest brother, he ends up, he's responsible for her, and so he's like, you know, why aren't you being raised properly, and where's your hat and gloves, and he wants to just send her away immediately.
Yeah,
I like what they do with Mycroft here, in that like he's not a bad dude. Like, I know you're not supposed to like him or agree with him, but he's of the time, right? And so what
he's not like the mustache twirling villain to where you're like, oh, he's going to be the bad guy. He's just
in this time frame. What he's trying to do with her is it would be the path to success for women. And so his heart is in the right place, even if it's not anything that she wants at all. And that would be difficult. Like, as a parent, there are times when kids want certain things. There are times when you just have to say, well, they have to deal with the consequences of that choice. And there's times when you're like, absolutely not. You can't wear chocolate syrup as pants.
It's interesting because we've had so many different iterations of Sherlock in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Right.
Oh, I mean, there's a ton because you figure.
Well, I mean, I just mean in the last 15. Right. So you had the original stuff with Basil Rathbone.
Well, that's not 15 years. That's like
Well, no, but I'm saying like there's all kinds of different versions.
Absolutely.
Of this
character. So you're talking about the movie with Downey Jr., show
and
with
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
And
like, those are the two.
And
Johnny Lee Miller.
CBS.
Elementary. Yeah, Elementary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and Elementary.
So you've had different versions of Mycroft, and it's interesting that the Mycroft that we get in the BBC show is pretty much a jerk, but deep down he loves Sherlock, right? Like, there's just affinity for Sherlock, even though he knows that Sherlock cannot return the same emotions. But he is pragmatic, where he's like, I have to do the right thing for the country, and maybe that's not the right thing for my brother. Mm-hmm. In this version of Mycroft, I don't get that sense at all. I get the sense that he does not want to be part of this family, and he's just stuck. So he is insanely rude to Eola. There's a lot of disdain towards Sherlock, so he isn't the villain of this movie, but he is an antagonist to an extent. And yeah, I just think that I mean, it's just an interesting take on that character.
He wants different things, and so he's working at cross purposes. But he knows
he's not smarter than Sherlock. That's the other.
Does he? I mean, because in the books, Sherlock says he's smarter than he is. It's just he's decided to go work for the government,
right?
And there's what even I'm a line in like, one of the books where he says, like, he's so adept at what he does, he says that he is the government, like, that he's that good at it. So
I'm saying that Mycroft has an inferiority complex to his famous brother.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I just don't know that I was getting the same read. Like, I was just thinking he thinks he's better than everybody. Like,
I just think they're all three on different trajectories. The deal is that Mycroft is working for the government. Sherlock is breaking all these cases. Enola wants to be her own person, but the only idea Mycroft has for her is of the time, as Tom said, and he wants her to go to finishing school so she can find a husband. Like, they've all got these different trajectories of what they want to do and what they want for each other, but I didn't really sense any animosity between any of them, to be perfectly frank. Like, the most, to Joe's point, is Enola and Mycroft. I can't even say his name right because there's so many. But Enola and Mycroft, because he wants something different for her. But like Tom said, it's just because he wants what's best for her. And we're looking at this through modern eyes. And yes, this movie has a lot to say in a modern sense, but you have to remember the time period. And so things are happening that were very of the time. And so anyway, but they're all, I really like them all three in their roles. And Claflin. He is so
Claflin
dislikable in the best way. Like, he is really, really good. Like, you want to hate Mycroft because, again, like, he's not a bad guy, but he wants the different things that we want for our characters. And so he does a great job at being like smarmy and just like, just let her do her own thing.
And it's such a weird role for him in many ways, because, like, if you think about the other stuff he's done, like the movie Me Before You, or, like, playing Finnick in the Hunger Games movies, this is not the sort of role
that
he typically
plays. Wait a minute, that's Finnick from the Hunger Games?
That's Finnick from the Hunger Games,
yes. Oh, I did not realize that. Okay.
And he typically plays these very, like, charismatic roles and very, very much not Mycroft. So to see him in a role like this.
Me Before You, is he kind of a jerk in that, though? For good reasons, I mean, but he's kind
of
like...
But not the, like, sort of, like, frigid, like, uptight, like... Okay. I don't know. I just think it's a very interesting role to see him in, and I think that he does a very good job with it.
Yeah, because he's so charismatic, usually, and you're like, I don't like you here, though.
Right? But I do think that it's an interesting thing. If you definitely get the sense that he's very frustrated, and part of that frustration is that he really is the one who doesn't fit in this family.
Yeah, that's a good
point. If you look at the mother, if you look at Sherlock, if you look at Enola, and you have to kind of assume that their father was probably more on that side of things.
Yeah.
On the Mycroft side?
No, I honestly, like, I guess it's kind of hard to say. Either way, he's been out of the picture for a long time.
But the three of them are solving puzzles and smart, and they're doing science. Like, the three of them all do the same thing to a certain extent. And then
you have Mycroft, who's on this, like, path that is, like, the accepted path. And I don't think he thinks he's doing anything bad. I think he's like, well, Enola, like, this is what girls do. Like,
yeah.
And he can't figure out, like, why she would be resisting that. Yeah. Because, you know, he's like, but I'm doing something good for you. I'm paying to send you to school. Like,
I like when movies do something like do that with their characters, where, like, he's, like we said before, he's not a villain. He's trying to do what he thinks is the right thing for her. It's just, it's not, but he's not trying to deliberately be mean or cruel. And on some level, he's right. Like, for the era, if you want the safe path, go do this thing. You have these options. Why would you piss it away? And even though, as in the present day, we're just like, oh, those are awful options. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, so the mother she disappeared and left these clues, and Enola is the one that picks up on them, because she leaves her very specific things that she's been teaching her, and a lot of it is through her flowers, and she paints them, and she left her a deciphering kit that has different flowers and different ciphers. So,
well, what I like about that is that while Enola is working her case, Sherlock is already working his case as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they're working their case, like, so where Enola is looking at the flowers and turning over pictures and figuring that stuff out, Sherlock is already like, I saw this, I saw the embers on the bottom of her shoe, and I looked in the chimney. So like they're both doing the same thing at the same time,
just from different
two separate
angles.
Cases.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
I also like that. Like they clearly have a great deal of affinity for the source material. It would be
they do.
It would be very easy to make Enola smart by making Sherlock dumb, and they
right.
and they yeah. never do that. Like they never take Sherlock Holmes down a peg. The closest they get to that is at the very end. Fast forwarding real quick for a second, where she ends up basically solving it a couple
before
minutes
he
before he does.
Yeah.
Right. But which was a nice touch because like he still solved it and figured it out, but she was just because and really it was almost more happenstance, like because
she was in it.
She was in it, so she
yeah.
figured it out a little
yeah,
bit faster.
Right, that's true. That's true.
To his credit, he wasn't in it and figured it out almost the same time, and she was interacting with the villains and the, you know, right in the middle.
So I thought that was clever, and I appreciated that they didn't have to make him dumb or a buffoon in order to prop her up.
Yep.
Yeah, the real big change to Sherlock, and I think this is so funny, like, this is honestly maybe my favorite thing in 2020.
Oh, the lawsuit?
Is that they made him... emotional, supposedly, which is funny whenever you like to hear about this whole lawsuit that like the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle estate like sued them because they were like, oh, well, like him having emotions isn't actually within you know the part of Sherlock Holmes that is no longer copyrighted, and then you see the movie and you're like, that's him being emotional.
Like, right.
Okay, like- so to that point though is if you go back and watch the Cumberbatch stuff, he doesn't like, there are moments, right? There's moments where we think that, well, I'm not going to spoil that for anybody, but because if you haven't seen that, do that. Cause that's amazing. But there are emotional beats. There's emotional beats in the Robert Downey Jr. stuff. But this is, I wasn't sure if Cavill was playing it that way or if that's Cavill, right? Like if he's that stiff on purpose or if it's just kind of how he, because I will say it looks like they poured him into those costumes. Like I'm like, you know, he doesn't have to wear the skin tight suit all the time. Like I get that dude's,
hey, if you got it
to the that's what I'm saying, I get that the dude is jacked to the gills.
If I was built like that, I would never not be in a skin tight
and maybe
suit.
There are some people that wish that are fine with it, Joe.
Yeah,
that's true. But I'm just saying, like, from a movement standpoint, it looked like he would, like, he couldn't move his arms. And like he would have to turn sideways to walk,
you know,
through
a
door.
But I don't see Sherlock as a character though that's very like,
he's not.
I mean, Sherlock is a character I think that's going to be just as stiff if he was in sweatpants and a baggy t-shirt. You know
what
I mean? Like,
that's
he's
my,
Sherlock.
That's my point.
He's going to
yeah,
be walking
sure,
around
sure.
stiff and all that. But okay, let's get to the train. So Enola doesn't want to go to finishing school. The Aunt Petunia from Harry Potter comes to take her away. And she is like, I'm out of here. I need to find my mother and solve this case. She ends up going on a train because she's like, well, the bike's not going to cut it here. And she gets on the train and ends up meeting. Does anyone remember the whole name of the Viscount?
This is my problem with this movie.
What's that?
As soon as they introduce a cute boy, she completely forgets her mission. Right? Yeah. Like this whole time she's like, I gotta find my mom. I gotta find my mom. As soon as the cute boy is introduced and he gets in trouble, she's like, maybe I'll go help the boy instead.
I don't agree though, because
yeah, I was just gonna say, I think in some ways though that kind of mirrors Sherlock. In that
her duty,
you know, he sees this other case and he's going to go fight that. But then whenever it comes to his family, that's something he's willing to neglect for however many years. So it's like she sees this case, it's easier to solve. And she's like,
she says the mother can take care of herself. She said, this guy's going to die. It was her duty to help him.
I love that she's essentially like, he's so stupid.
Yeah.
He needs help.
She does call him an idiot a lot. But also the look on her face, where she gets all googly eyed because
she's a young
boy, McPretty boy.
No, she's a young
okay,
girl
but
though.
How many detective stories? I mean, if you know how.
No,
I mean,
that's true.
How many detective stories where it's like the hard boiled detective as soon as the dame with gams comes into his office, he's all googly eyed, and by googly eyed I mean penis, and you know he does the same thing. Like that's also, I get that from like a more female based storytelling device, it seems a little dismissive, but I would also say it's a very common trope of detective stories.
That's true.
And she's not the damsel in distress. She's saving him. And yeah. like Nicole said, it's because of his, he's inept. He has no idea to take care of himself. And so she knows the mother is very capable of handling herself. And she's like, that has to be put on hold because I feel a duty. She turns to the camera and says, like, I need to go do this, but this guy's dumb and he's going to die. So I really like how they handled
it. Well, she turned to the camera and asked if we should help him. And we said yes. So it's our own fault.
But,
oh, man.
But also to the point, like, she's at an age in her life where she's going to be attracted to people. And so relatable to the audience, and especially if you're a younger audience, I think that that component is very natural.
I watched this the first time with my 17-year-old sister. And I'm trying to think, there was a specific scene where she turned to me and was like, oh, I was like, oh, okay, you're buying this romance. Like, great.
I also think that the romance aspect is fairly understated. I think I think that if this movie had been made 20 or 25 years ago, it would have been a lot more about this boy and her being googly-eyed for him. And I think you probably would have also seen a lot more of that boy helping her as opposed to her.
And he pretty much disappears.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. He does kind of like he becomes the second case.
Yeah,
but he's not in the movie a lot.
And how different does he look when they cut his hair?
Right,
like I'm so like different. They recast it.
That's good. That's good to know.
Yeah,
but it's like he went from it was period piece hair to modern hair, and it was like, yeah, completely.
All of a sudden, I was like, is he a Sprouse? Like, do the Sprouse twins have a younger brother that I didn't know about? Like,
yeah. So he ends up to skip over it. He's a lord, and he is on the run. They want him to take over all these family duties, but
the underlying thing is there's a vote coming that's going to give women more the right to vote and more power. And it turns out that I don't know, it's not the Senate, whatever they have over there,
the Parliament. House of Lords,
the Parliament, thank you, is split right down the middle, and he is the deciding vote,
and he's a young, more
very
progressive.
Obvious that he's going to the progressive side. So there's this man, I can't think of this actor's name, but he's always
the guy from Pacific Rim. Remember,
he's always a bad guy. Yeah. Not always a bad guy.
Not Willem Dafoe.
I was thinking like a not young Willem Dafoe. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought.
That is Bern Gorman.
So always bad guy? That's what his name is?
Yeah. Bern Gorman. It sounds like a villain name, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Bern, yeah, his mom was like, you can be a great movie villain, Bern.
I'm gonna get you a ding ding real quick. I was watching a documentary. Do you know what Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's real name was?
Well, I don't even know who Ricky the Dragon Steamboat
well, that's ridiculous.
Really is.
That's ridiculous. His name was Ricky Youngblood, and they're just like, why didn't you stick with that? Like, that's an amazing wrestling name. And they're like, I don't know. They named me Steamboat. That's what the way that works.
Interesting. So, but there's two things at play here with him. He's running away because he's not interested in that life, but he's also being chased down by the ominous, like, we don't know, the mysterious figure that has been hired to kill him because they don't want him to vote for the women's rights. So, like, he's on the run for his own reasons, but also being chased down. And Enola and he on the train, once they meet, she sends him on his way, but then he starts running away from the Bern Gorman character, and the bad guy's holding him out the train window, and Nola saves him, and they end up running off together, and she's kind of, like Joe was saying, like, she's tasked with looking out for him when she's got her own mission at hand.
Very briefly, though.
Yeah, she sends him on his way after this.
She cuts his hair, and then puts him on
the
back.
He's like, we could team up, and she's like, I'm good. Thanks, actually.
And that's the part.
You are useless to me.
That's the part where it's not typical, where it's like, she's just like, nope, I got my mission. And
then she keeps being like, oh no, he's going to die. And I probably could have saved him. Like,
one of the smart things about this script is they figure out a way to intertwine both of her cases. Mm-hmm. So like, while she's working the mom case, like, starts to like trickle in, and they're starting to put these pieces together.
Yeah, I don't like it when stories do that. That's a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's like, she meets him randomly. Like, what are the odds that on one case, she stumbles into the other? Like,
unless they really are related.
Right, unless there is something that you find out, like, caused the motivation for them to enter, to cross paths. But it's like, she just randomly meets him on a train, and so that just, it's so... I don't know.
It's a coincidence.
Chaos. It's just so chaos theory that I just like. And a lot of detective movies do this, where the you know, as soon as there's a second case, you know they're gonna match. And it's, right. And at the end of the day, it is a kid's movie, and so like I'm not gonna like beat it up too much for it, but I don't like it.
Isn't that a Sherlock thing though? Didn't they do that in
probably
the BBC show?
Probably.
I think they did.
They do it a lot.
I think he'd work like a minor case, but then like the major case would somehow.
Yeah,
it's different it's different if they actually tie in together. But like if she was going somewhere and he and the kid was going somewhere for the same reason, and that same reason was something the other case was doing, like that's different than Tom saying she was randomly on a train.
Right.
Right.
Why would
he
end up being a part of the
yeah,
women's
he
vote?
He ends up being put into a bag.
And the mom's part of the women's vote, and they the stories cross over. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So she sends him on the way, and she has some really nice scenes where she now is trying to track down the mom, but she has to fit in as a proper lady. It's like she goes to get fitted in the dress, and the lady, the shop owner just dismisses her, but she's like, oh, I've got all this money here. And, you know, the lady, of course, is like, oh, wide eyes. You know, and she gets the dress, and, oh,
she's
gonna
make
also
it rain. Well, she's
right.
British.
That's
she's
right. Yeah,
make
right.
It precipitate.
And I do like that she gets a whalebone corset, and it's like, well, that's going to come back into play later. Like we wouldn't tell the audience
Chekhov's corset.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, but to Kevin's point, yeah, she just starts working the case, and ends up
real quick. You know what I love about her being high class, you know, sophisticated, is it also says. She's not doing it because she can't. She's doing it because she doesn't want to.
Right.
Entering this world of the upper crust.
And that she is smart enough to know when it works to her advantage to play that role.
Yeah.
And when to use it versus when she, you know, I love the running gag throughout of her like going up to like young men and being like, I'll give you £5 for your clothes.
Yeah.
That's great.
And they're like, what?
Yeah. And they're like, okay, I guess. So she ends up going to like the docks, which again is very it's interesting how many little callbacks to the other stuff there is, because there's a massive scene in the Robert Downey Jr. one, like on the docks, where Sherlock and Watson have a fight on the docks.
Doesn't she go to the tea shop first before she goes to the docks? Because she says that her mother was corresponding.
Oh, right. She meets her old jiu-jitsu master.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and then she sends her on the way to the docks, and she has a fight that she doesn't really win with the bad guy, not Willem Dafoe. Like, she gets away, but she doesn't win that fight. Like, she wins that fight on accident.
This guy has a name, Linthorn. I don't know if anyone ever says it in the movie, but the bad guy's name is Linthorn.
No. Okay.
They just call him, like, Man in the Boulder Hat for most of the movie.
Yeah,
so I'm like,
yeah.
That's so weird when characters, you're like, I don't think they ever said that name, but he's named.
So she gets away, and then
but just barely. I'm like, I
barely.
Mean,
it's a fight she does not win.
That scene's pretty intense. Like,
it is.
I was like, isn't this a children's movie? And then I looked, and it is rated like PG-13.
She's
and I was like,
stabbed.
Okay.
They're blowing people up.
But almost anything is rated PG-13 these days. Like, it's really hard to get a PG, and
that's
damn near impossible to get a G. I mean, what used to be G is now PG, and you might go a full calendar year without getting a G-rated movie.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's those Disney nature flicks are the only ones that really can pull that off.
For real, yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what I said about Halloween. Halloween, if you release the 1978 version today, that's a PG-13 movie.
Isn't there
blood?
The
there's no blood. There's not a single drop
it's
of
the
blood.
Nudity.
Isn't there nudity?
I mean, you can, okay.
But that's what it is, though.
You're
not
no, you
can
get away with a nip in PG-13. Well, you used to be able to.
I don't,
it's pretty,
well, I haven't seen
you can
it.
Anymore.
I haven't seen it in forever. The last movie I can remember, last PG-13 movie I remember with boobs in it was
Return to the Blue Lagoon.
Just
no, actually, it's newer than that. Was the Total Recall remake, but that's only because they recycled the three breast gag.
Oh, the three.
And it was so like obviously
and it
wasn't sexual at all.
Right.
Like you know, like you know. I mean, I don't think I'm giving anything away. Big fan of boobs, but that third one really throws me off. Like, and I'm not.
I do appreciate that guy who was like, I wish I had a third hand. Now I'm just, I don't know what to do.
So she in the docks. So when she finds out what they've been working on, because she sees like the door has the same ribbon that the mom wrapped the present in. We're getting a lot of flashes of Sherlock
and the same ribbon that her mom and that they were wearing.
Yeah,
like that women's club was wearing those ribbons.
Right, but the Sherlock flashes that she's getting, we see Enola has that same kind of deductive capability. And so she keeps flashing back to like past moments and putting the clues together, and I really like how they visualize it. We haven't touched upon it yet, but this movie is very stylized.
Yeah, it is.
The introduction where she's like, you know, my father's dead, and there's like an old-timey photograph, but like he falls over in the photograph and comes up with a grave.
It's like the Monty Python stuff.
Yeah.
It is exactly like that.
And then she's like, my brother, Sherlock, or my brother, you know him. And then it's all his cases, and she's like, he can fight. And then like it's like him boxing and sword fighting, and they actually like make an old-timey character with Henry Cavill's features. Like it's just a very... like quick-paced, fast-moving, stylized movie. And
what I love about that too is, I mean, it's a massive exposition dump, but it's done in a way that's engaging, and so you give it a pass.
You're not listening to somebody explain it to you. They're giving you a nice little device that's outside of the norm.
They're catching you up, but it's not like they're talking to you like you're stupid. But if you have no idea what anything about Sherlock and the family, they're like, well, we gotta have you understand it. And you're right, it's entertaining enough to captivate you, but then like they move right on. It's like 5 minutes in the beginning and then you're off.
Right, so when she's going through the warehouse on the docks, they do kind of set up the mom like a possible terrorist. Like there's bombs, and bombs. I mean, and we stuff. Don't know yet. We don't know the vote's coming, and
I think she might be. Like
I think she might be.
It looks like she's probably involved in the like suffragette movement,
right? That's
which was known for you know
bombs occasionally
violent.
Yeah,
that's the difference between the suffragists and the suffragettes, I think, if I have them not flipped, is that one of them was a pacifist group and the other one was a violent group.
Yeah. And if memory serves, and this isn't my strong suit, but if memory serves, didn't they tend to try and, like, they tended to bomb places when they were empty? It was more, like, they weren't trying to...
It was about, like, destroying property and getting attention.
Right, yeah. Like, it wasn't so much about, like, we're going to kill people that don't agree with us. It's more like, you know, you're going to listen.
It's a lot
to
of, like, smashing windows.
Right.
Like,
wasn't it mainly targets that they were going after?
You mean like actual targets?
They're just blowing up the targets.
Like
the
retail location.
Yeah.
I was like, well, anything you throw a bomb at is technically a target. Oh, you
I was like, you know that everything's a target.
Yeah.
That was a modern callback.
Yes. If only it had been
I got what you were doing.
If only that had been a Kohl's, the joke would have worked so much better. But yeah, because I mean, there, you know, and there was a movie not too long ago called Suffragette or Suffragist, I can't remember.
With and Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, totally. And it tells this whole story. But yeah, there was an actress named Kitty Marion. Did I get that right? And she, you know, this was a very big real issue. And so, well, because I even said to you, Kevin, you messaged me while I was watching the movie, and I was like, I'm assuming this is going to be about suffrage.
Yeah, I didn't say anything because I don't want to give it away, but I'm like, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, but what it looked like, what you get from the scene is there were explosives in this warehouse she finds. And what it comes down to is that Enola, and we don't end up getting into it in this movie, but she's going to end up having to decide between, you know, her mother and stopping her mother because, I mean, even though her mother has good intentions with trying to push women's rights and all this, things she agrees with, she's going about it the wrong way. And Enola isn't going to be for blowing things up. So she's trying to track her down, but I don't think she agrees with the way that she's handling things. So we're going to have to see.
So is that a plot thread through the books? I don't know anything.
I don't think
they
tie that closely from my understanding. Did you read any of them, Nicole?
I haven't actually.
Okay. I just, from what I looked up, like the title of the book has something to do with someone's missing. And so I think they took the mom storyline from that. But my understanding is it's not following that thread necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So anyway, but this is when they get into that fight and she ends up getting away because I think she lights some of the fireworks.
Yeah, she blows up some of the sparklers and stuff. And then so she gets back to her room, and then it turns out the gal who was subletting the room and sold her the dress sold her out to Mycroft, and she is sent to the boarding school, and it is not going well. Like it is just she just refuses to conform, which given my personality, I can appreciate. She believes she's going to have a visit from Mycroft. They, of course, the headmistress is we talk about like head over heels for a boy.
Yeah.
Like loves her some Mycroft.
I thought that plot line was hilarious.
Yeah.
Obviously she is so like in love with Mycroft and they're both trying to impress each other. And so, yeah, I like that moment a lot where Enola won't even look. She's like, your brother's here. And she presumes right. It's
she's
Mycroft.
Like, what does he want?
So yeah. Here's something I don't like about the finishing school. And I don't, okay. And the movie does this in a few other places as well. Is that, and like, let me finish my thought before you tell me I'm a horrible person.
Boy.
The movie uses colorblind casting, which I'm not opposed to, but when one of your plot points is about class inequality, and it's weird to kind of make that choice when you're still talking about people's civil rights, right? Like, it's like you see Black and Asian girls at this finishing school, and unless I'm just woefully mistaken, would that have been a thing at this point in time?
I mean, I would gotta think no. We see like Asian folks at the docks, but
right.
That makes sense. Like for that time period, that would make sense. You see the African American gal serving tea in a tea shop that she owns, which also probably wouldn't have owned.
Right. Would women even have owned businesses at that time period? I mean, I don't
know. No, because that's what they're fighting for, basically. That's what this vote is,
yeah,
is
there's,
for, I would
there's
assume.
Weird things around, like, well, like, if she had been married and
her husband had died, yeah,
she maybe could have inherited it.
Oh,
like,
sure.
But
yeah.
This is where they have to tiptoe that line. And, Tom,
right.
I get what you're saying, but when you've got a young adult movie and
totally,
it's
yeah.
about empowering women, it's like they do have to tiptoe that line where do they make it historically accurate or do they include?
I agree, except that when the story is starting to pull in, it's historical fiction at this point, and they're trying to pull
right.
in stories about, you know, women's rights in this world, then it's like now it's a little bit more grounded in reality where it's harder. Like at that point, then you have to ask yourself the question, are they being inclusive now or are they papering over past cultural missteps?
Both.
I think it's both.
I think it's
point,
a fair question to ask.
I just don't think that you're at this point, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing either, but at this point, like with colorblind casting,
yeah.
I think that's just going to be a thing. And so
sure.
One thing is kids that are learning history right now, they can't necessarily learn it. All the facts from movies. I mean, they're
right.
going to have to go elsewhere. You can learn
yeah.
about a movement or this thing existed, but you can't take it as everyone looked or did the same thing in that time period because
yeah. there are just certain stories you can't tell with colorblind casting. You can't do 12 Years a Slave with colorblind casting.
There's
right?
certain you can't, but with the ones where it's not main characters or main storylines, I think
and I feel
just
like this one kind of is brushing up against that.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah. So she, yeah, she's like, I got to get out of here. And Sherlock comes and visits her and sees how she's doing.
And he gives her like a little pep talk, right? Like he's like, I get it. I understand. And she kind of drills down on him. She's like, yeah, you bailed, man. Like you don't know anything about this life and you left us. Why did you leave? And, you know, he's kind of got to own that a little bit, but not in a Sherlock kind of way.
He gives her a dash here, right?
He gives her the pine cone that looks absolutely revolting.
I don't know why
you would carry that thing around.
That's a really cute moment between them. When we talk about Sherlock and having emotions and the relationship between he and Enola, like this is the first moment where he really kind of opens up and he's like, no, I remember you had this as a kid and you loved it and I actually got it for you and took the time. And so it's a really nice bonding moment between the two of them.
It was still gross.
But, okay,
so
this
gross
is a
about
very
an old pine cone.
It's like, an old timey,
covered in
like
weird hair. Oh, I don't know.
It's cute in an old timey way. But
yeah.
Doesn't he also say like check the papers? I'd be checking all the papers.
Yeah,
is this...
yeah. Well, I think no. She grabs the paper from him.
Oh, from him. That's right.
He knows. Like, he knows it's already in there.
Yeah.
Or
he's like,
yeah.
You can have this. I'm not using it anymore. And then she. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm just checking the papers. And he was like, okay.
So Tewksbury, Lord, the kid actually comes and saves her from finishing school.
Yeah, gets her
well,
out.
He tries.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he gives it a go.
He rolls up and is like, I'm here to save you. What are you going to do?
Yeah, and he's like, I'll get you out the way we came in. And then he pushes her in the chest that was just delivered, supposedly. But then the headmistress comes over and he's like, I have a package for the headmistress. She's like,
I do
okay.
like that that's his go-to. He's like, I'll just put him in a bag or put him in a case. Like, it'll work.
That's his thing. It worked once. Yeah.
He has but, one move.
That's
one
another move, nice moment, though. That's where we get more of the Mycroft connection there, where he's like, no, Mycroft said you have to open this personally by yourself in your office. And so that's when they end up
that was
sneaking
smart,
away.
Though. We got to get
yeah.
him
there was,
that.
Yeah, that was clever. He's not completely useless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost. So they get away, and this is where they start
putting steal her
together.
Motor car.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. But this is where they start putting it, where she starts putting it together. Like, this kid's dad is dead. He has the final vote. And as they're talking, it's like, it's pretty obvious which way he's going to go. So they realize that they have got to get him home to get this vote to happen. Because
they realize, and they realize that it must be the uncle that wants him dead because he's the male heir. So
he
would be the
one to vote.
Yeah.
Or the next one to be in line to vote. So they have to get him back home so that, you know, they can get this squared away. So they get the kid home and they realize there's nobody there, which is, you know, the guy's like calling for the servants and everybody, and nobody's coming. And then there is another, I mean, like knockdown, drag out fight with the bowler hat dude.
Yeah. Well, he's got a shotgun.
Yeah. And he's just like, he's just shooting things.
And if you got babies trying to take a nap, turn this scene down. I'm just gonna tell you right now.
I feel like
those gunshots are loud.
I will also say, like, the kid, the older one watched it with me and she goes, that didn't seem that long. I was like, I gotta tell you, it seemed really long. But I'm like, did you like it? And she was like, yeah, it was fun. I was like, good, maybe I can get you to read a goddamn book.
But we should mention, we just brushed over it, but there is a grandmother. His grandmother is also in the picture. And when you watch the movie a second time, which I know Nicole has, it's interesting what you pick up on, how she's like, you know, things should be the way they are. And people are, the young people are always looking to the future, but what's right now is important, not what it could be. And so you pick up on that a second time, that like she is very set in the old ways.
Right.
And so this is where you get the big reveal after this knockout, drag out fight. The grandmother like walks over.
I want to point out another little thing, and I don't know if it's just a coincidence or if it actually symbolizes something, but when this guy, when not Willem Dafoe falls and conks his head and gets smashed in the temple.
Oh
yeah.
It's the bedpost or whatever that he hits is shaped like a pine cone.
I noticed that. There were so many things the second time around watching it. I was like, oh,
like, which is the best part of like mystery detective type stuff, because there's all these clues they plant for you, and then those are the best to watch again.
But yeah, so it turns out that the grandmother is the one that set up the kid, because the uncle is subservient enough to follow her vote. Like, she wants him to, she knows that she cannot control the kid, but she can control the uncle.
And she's very stuck in the way that things are. She's like, things should not change. This is for the best. And so she knows, like, even though this is her grandson, like, she can't risk the whole world changing because, you know. So she's got him.
She's like, sorry, kid.
Yeah
and shoots him in the chest with, like, with a shotgun. The kid falls down, and this is where she gives the explanation. And, of course, the kid pulls a Marty McFly from Back to the Future 3. where he's wearing the bulletproof, the suit of armor.
This is the same problem I have with Bill and Ted, funnily enough, where they're like next to a suit of armor and then it flashes to the next scene. It's like, yeah, they're able to quietly and quickly put on armor because, you know, that's so quick. But
yeah,
right. Like, not, you wouldn't have heard that whenever he fell.
I will say this.
I still don't like this piece, but I will give them this much credit over Bill and Ted.
Okay.
I believe that this guy has a better chance at knowing how to put on suit and armor.
Okay,
That's fair.
Than Ted Theodore Logan.
Yeah. But that movie convention is always gets me, where it's like, you know, flash forward to the very next, like, you see him hiding next to a suit of armor and they're in the dark. It's quiet. The killer's trying to find them. And then all of a sudden he was able to put on armor without anyone finding him, noticing it. Anyway,
and his clothes fit over it. But you would also, if I was Enola, I'd be like, wait, so you thought there was a chance that somebody might be shooting at us? So you went ahead and put on some bulletproof stuff, but thanks for
the heads up. Here.
That's nice. Yeah. So they end up. Of course, because she didn't kill him, and I guess she's out of bullets, they're like, oh, well, you're caught.
Yeah.
And that's
so
it.
That's the next scene is they kind well, of have
when,
like a...
When you take the shotgun away from a 90-year-old woman, they're pretty easy to take
yeah.
down.
Yeah. So the next scene is the kid, he's about to go in and make the vote, and they have...
No, the next scene is Sherlock.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, and so Lestrade. Sherlock goes in Lestrade. They sit down and...
He walks in, and he's going to, you know...
He lays it all out. He was like, explain it. Lestrade's like, tell me what happened. And Sherlock, to his credit, lays out the plot exactly, and he was like, cool. Your sister just did this about 5 minutes ago. Yeah. And he was like, "Dawr!"
And that smile he gives when he walks away because he's so proud of Enola.
Of course.
Is
yeah, that's
great,
the thing.
Though.
He doesn't, I you know, it. I know you're just being silly, Joe, but he really doesn't go, "Dawr." He's like, hey, nice. You know?
Yeah, well, like, I think when he's sitting there, he was like, wait, what? And then he walks away. I do also like when he's about to walk into the police station and the cop goes to stop him, and he was like, don't even bother, and just walks right past him. Like, that's that about was, the most Sherlock Holmes thing
that was a good moment.
He yeah. does in this thing.
But Henry Cavill, in that moment, that's why you hire Henry Cavill, for that charisma he brings to where he's a really good Sherlock. I'd like to see him more as Sherlock, mm-hmm. but with the emotion that he can show when he chooses to, because like Joe said earlier in the podcast, he's a great actor, and given the right role, he can be super charming and super charismatic. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We may be seeing more of him. I mean, has there ever been an actor who has possibly been tied? We'll find out. He might be James Bond. Like, that's the
mm-hmm. oh yeah, he's always
rumor,
been
right?
kicked
like,
around for that.
Superman,
yeah.
Sherlock Holmes, and possibly has there been an actor who had like three major franchises to their credit?
So some big ever? Roles. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I can't think of any other actor that had like three different franchises.
Well, I guess Robert Pattinson is coming for it because
oh,
he was
fair.
In Harry
that
Potter,
works.
Twilight, and is going to be Batman.
Yeah,
and he's only getting word. Started. He's what
yeah.
in his 30s.
Yeah.
Like that dude is. Yeah,
he's still going got time to play James Bond too.
Yeah, see? But so like to my point though, just that one smirk, and he's great throughout the movie, but you can see why they hire Henry Cavill, and he's walking away and you think maybe Sherlock's gonna be mad that she broke the case first, and he's walking out all serious, and he gives that smirk, and he says everything with that look. He's proud of her, and he's you know, he's encouraging her like he's been through the rest of the movie, and so it's a really nice moment.
He's like the big brother of dreams.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, right? It's great.
I'm like, damn, I wish I had a big brother like that.
Yeah,
Pixie, it was the manic pixie big brother.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny you say that because earlier I was thinking that Helena Bonham Carter's character, I can't remember the name,
Mrs. Holmes.
Sure,
Mrs. Holmes.
She was probably whatever Sherlock Holmes' father's name was. She was probably his manic pixie dream girl.
Probably.
Because if you look at how she behaves, she's very she's very like carefree, and the boys grew up with some semblance of order that seems to have dissipated when the dad was no longer in the picture.
Well, one of them,
yeah,
yeah.
The other one turned out to be a heroin addict, but that's neither here nor there.
But a really
I
smart
love
one.
That you invented the story that the mom was the dead dad that we never see other than telling he's dead, his manic pixie dream girl.
Well, I mean, honestly, if you look how she behaves with the whole, like, oh, I don't care if you break these family heirlooms. Like, well, you learned a good, you know, overhand serve, you know? And
That's hilarious.
It makes sense.
You're not
it
wrong.
Works.
It yeah, works. No, it's funny. I never thought of it. So this is the end scene where it's like
he's going to make the vote. She's all googly eyed with him, and he kisses her hand, and she's all a flutter.
I don't think she's all a flutter.
Get out of here!
It's a nice moment.
I think
moment.
He's all a flutter. Honestly, like he's like, do you want to come and live with me? And she's like, no.
No. I think she's very a very strong, capable female character. And there's a relationship because this is a young adult movie and there's a romance in it. But I think the way they wrote her is very much the one in control. And
I think it walks the line very well in terms of like a lot of times it's like the shorthand for showing that she's a strong woman is to just flat out reject romance entirely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I think this walked a good line of like,
she's definitely still, not rejecting it.
She's still a human being. And at some point she's going to fall in love with somebody. And that in and of itself is not a sign of weakness, but she's going to make romantic choices that also benefit. She's not going to make a poor choice just because she fell in love with somebody, or she
right.
not even fell in love, find somebody attractive.
It's not going to be this doofus, I'll tell you that.
But for the audience, though.
But not right now.
For the teen audience, though, there's the romance, if you're looking for it. But if you're not looking for that, you're also like, no, she's strong, capable, and doesn't need him. So to your point, Tom,
So I think they get that at the end, right? At the very end, where she gets a message from who she assumes to be Sherlock. But I think she knows that it's not.
No, it is it's Sherlock.
No, it's Mycroft sent it.
Oh, I thought
Sherlock says, she's like, I bet you she thinks that's, oh, maybe I got that flipped.
No, it's from the mom, but she knows Sherlock sent it to try to find
You're right.
Because he signed it off wrong.
Right.
But yeah, she's like,
love mother.
Which I feel like he did on purpose.
She's all like, she would never say mother.
Yeah, she would use the flower name and the code words. And
also,
everything.
Why would you need to sign it? The fact that she found it means that she knows it's a message from her mother, or she wouldn't have bothered to decode it.
I feel like that's,
well, that's awfully polite when you've got to convert your signature into this arcane code. Like,
but I feel like that is Sherlock laying a clue. And seeing if she picks up on it, like that's a test from Sherlock to figure out if she's actually going to fall for it or not. And
well,
she doesn't.
He says
like
as
she,
much. He says he goes. Well, I assume she knew it wasn't really from her mother, like our mother. Mm-hmm. But you know, like he says that.
Right. So she's kind of hiding in the crowd, much Robert Downey Jr.'s character.
She buys the newspaper kid, like Nicole's favorite running gag with the
$10.
I'll give you $5 for your.
So she places the rat thing on the monument.
Dash the pine cone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where Sherlock will find it, and then you know they kind of walk away, and the Mycroft and Sherlock kind of agree that whenever they come find Enola again.
Enola.
That she will be Sherlock's ward. Mm-hmm. She'll be his Robin, basically.
Yeah, Sherlock's like, yeah, I'd like to take over here. And Mycroft's like, yeah, whatever.
He's like, you know what? Cool, because I don't want to deal with
he
that
He doesn't
kid.
Care, yeah.
Right.
Too much work for him.
So the final, like, post-credit sequence is her walking, is...
she goes back to her, like,
back
new,
to her
nice
little,
hotel
like,
room
new, newer room, and there's... her mom, and they have a nice embrace, and the mom's like, look, I can't stay, like, I am not in trouble, but I'm on the run, I don't want to get you involved, but you're doing great and I love you. And that's kind of, you know, that's how this one ends. And I think I did not want to watch this movie, but I was really surprised. Like, it was really well done. The kid liked it, and that's really the bottom line. Like, it was an enjoyable movie for me, but as long, you know, she enjoyed it more than I did.
Well, she's the demo, right?
She like is the demo, right? She's the demo. Yeah she's not.
I thought I was great, and my wife has watched it every day this week. Like, she loves it. It's one of her new favorite movies.
Like,
seriously,
all kinds of stuff on Netflix, right?
What's that?
There's all kinds of stuff on Netflix.
I know, but she loves this thing. No, she loves this movie though. Like, I
it
think
it is. Like the ideal comfort film. Like, my family's watched it, I think, 3 times now. Like, and I think it's also a kind of a nice movie for families, and that, like, my sister's 17, so she's very into like the whole like Enola thing and also the little romance, but like my dad appreciates like the actions, you know, the very like campy action sequences. My mother appreciates Henry Cavill.
Who doesn't?
But like, right. I watched it again last night, and I was like, this is the kind of movie that I could actually see myself watching quite a bit, because it's like, it's a nice background movie once you've seen it once. Like,
it's kind of like Bill and Ted in that Bill and Ted Face the Music. Like, it's in that level, that realm of like, I don't need to be paying attention to it, but if I just happen to catch a couple scenes here and there, that's cool.
It's
a nice quarantine movie, because it's got like enough emotional beats to like make you care, but not enough that you feel like emotionally exhausted after watching it. Like,
that'll be next week.
That's
don't
our
worry.
Starting point.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think it's fun. And Tom, did you watch it with your stepdaughter?
No, she was at her father's this weekend, so it was just me and my wife. My wife didn't care for it. She thought it was boring.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
And I didn't love it. I liked it, but I also know it's not necessarily for me, but I thought it was really well done. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm also, you know, grown up enough to know that it's like, even though it didn't necessarily grab me at the same level, that wasn't its goal. And I thought it was really well done. I would really like, I hope they make more of these. I thought it, you know, for, and you don't get a lot of movies like this anymore. Like, you know, the kind of the girl adventure action movies. Or you get a lot of girl protagonists lately in terms of, like, they basically have taken action movies and recast the leads as females, so so it, you know, it checks that box. And so, you know, Hunger Games and Divergent and stuff like that. But this used to be a movie that you would see a type of movie that you would see a lot of, like, in the 80s and 90s, and you really Journey of Natty Gann, stuff like that. You don't really get them anymore. And so I do think Netflix is doing a really good job of, like, filling gaps of movies that it's gotten so expensive to do movies theatrically that they want are tentpole pictures anymore, and that they're really kind of filling those missing
mid-tier.
Yeah, that mid-tier stuff that you just don't get anymore. And same way that you're starting to see with comedies as well. So
I will say I have a few issues with the film that I think would all be fixed if it gets a sequel.
Okay.
Because I do kind of feel like the plot has a lot of, like, loose ends that don't really get properly tied up. And, like, particularly the mom storyline, I was kind of like, we're going to introduce all this really interesting stuff and then not really resolve any of it.
Right.
Which, if they get a second one, then that's not a problem.
Sure.
But if this is all that it ever is, I'm kind of like, okay, well, I never got answers to a lot of my questions.
No, so they set this up for the sequel.
Yeah, I will say I feel like they're setting up for more. Like, if I didn't feel like they were setting up for more, then I would be complaining that it's like, you left all this stuff hanging. But I don't feel like it's poor writing. I do feel personally like it was a deliberate choice of, we're laying the groundwork for stories we can tell in the future, and it won't just feel like we invented it on the fly because we needed something to tell. Which
and especially
is good.
With all the books, they can pull, like, clearly this is a series, and so they went into it knowing, like, hey, we're going to make a film series if you watch this. And they introduced two cases in this movie. One is a case that you don't expect it to go that way. You're like, oh, this is the story of the missing mother. But then they go to this other case that's a mystery in its own, and they're like, well, it's only a two-hour movie, which I say only 2 hours. Like, there's only so much they can resolve at this point. They're like, so stay tuned. You better watch this thing and get the sequel.
Yeah.
And I do think it's done well enough already that they are probably going to go for the sequel.
I hope so. I think so. Yeah,
who knows? We don't know. We assume. We just have no idea, like, how Netflix even pays for these movies. Because there's no return. Like, your return is, I guess, it's your customer. You're like,
they have a credit card with a $17 billion limit, Joe. Yeah. We know how they
You can't even imagine the amount of miles that they have on that car. they don't pay to fly anywhere. I mean, not that you can fly anywhere, but if you could fly somewhere, they would spend no money doing it.
Those press junkets that they send everybody to, how do you think they're paying for those? It's all miles.
So, anyway, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21. And also stay tuned to the Binge Movies podcast where they're releasing their season premiere and I am on the first two episodes.
You're still recording that, right?
Good Lord. That's legit about 8 hours of recording.
Oh my gosh.
Two times because I'm an idiot.
This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. And Nicole, where can they find you?
I am on Twitter at Nicole Ackman 16. And you can also find me over at Next Best Picture or at Petticoats and Poppies History Girls at the Movies, where my friend and I talk about period drama from the perspective of people who have degrees in history.
Awesome. And of course, you can find the show online at facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help out. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Jenny is not Redcliffe's daughter.
What is this warm feeling in my chest? Why am I reeling in confusion? What is this fever in my head? Is it pox? Maybe gout? I can't seem to work it out. And why don't I feel triumphant? And why does it seem less than right that Watson's going to hang tonight and gasp and thrash and choke until he's dead? What is this strange sensation?
Where did I go wrong?
Why am I a sobbing, trembling
soon
mess?
My neck will snap in half,
and yet
I guess.
Know somehow,
and
if
yet,
he could hear
right now,
I would still forgive him.
More or less.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.